Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Helix Water has ended the district's drought declaration after all that rain, but residents are still asked to take some steps to conserve water, our most precious resource. The county has begun aerial spraying of waterways to stop mosquito breeding and prevent the spread of West Nile virus and other diseases. The Bureau of Land Management is proposing to put a higher priority on habitat conservation over other land uses such as livestock grazing and energy production, and they want public comments. Efforts to preserve the last descendants of San Diego's wild horse herd are intensifying, but also suffered a major loss, and we'll have details. San Diego's sheriff has a warning for people buying gift cards and tips on how to avoid getting scammed. President Joe Biden wants to extend federal health care benefits to Dreamers or young immigrants in the DACA program, but a lawsuit has been filed by opponents of that plan. On Tribal Beat, the Hamul Casino has obtained financing to move forward with its planned hotel project. La Mesa has hired a new assistant city manager, and El Cajon is cracking down on a motel where a sexual assault allegedly occurred. The state is considering legislation to protect consumers who need repairs for safety reasons. On Destination East County, we'll have some festive events coming up, including music festivals, car shows, a wine tasting festival, and more. Spring is in the air, and we'll have tips for you from Master Gardener Connie Beck on how to attract butterflies and hummingbirds to your garden. And finally, SDG&E is seeking federal funds to improve wildfire safety in our region. We'll also take you on the road to the Julian Fiddle Competition in one of our Best of East County episodes, with concerts by the Julian Fiddle Camp coming up in May. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Helix Water District Board on April 5th adopted a resolution declaring an end to the Level 2 water shortage response, which had mandated up to a 20% reduction in water use. The action follows heavy rains that have ended drought conditions locally. Director Kathleen Coates-Hedberg says although the water shortage locally is over and cuts in water use are no longer required, consumers should still continue to follow permanent water use efficiency measures that are still in effect. Those measures require that water users eliminate runoff from irrigation onto streets, hardscaping, structures, or adjacent properties. Don't water for at least 48 hours after rain. Don't water turf on public street medians. Don't wash down paved surfaces such as sidewalks, driveways, parking lots, or patios unless required for public safety or sanitation. Use recirculated water in ornamental fountains and water features. Wash vehicles using a hose with a positive shutoff nozzle and a bucket, and avoid washing vehicles during hot conditions when more water is required. Restaurants and other food service establishments may serve water upon request only. Hotels, motels, and other commercial lodging establishments must offer guests the option of not laundering towels and linens daily. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
San Diego County is conducting aerial larvicide drops on up to 51 local waterways to help stop mosquitoes from potentially spreading diseases such as West Nile virus. The drops will cover nearly 1,300 acres of hard-to-reach potential mosquito breeding areas in rivers, streams, ponds, and other waterways, as the county has been doing each year between April and October for the last two decades or so since West Nile virus first appeared in our region. According to the county, the larvicide does not hurt people or pets, but does kill mosquito larvae before they can grow into biting mosquitoes. West Nile virus is mainly a bird disease, but mosquitoes can pass the potentially deadly virus on to people by feeding on infected birds and then biting a person. West Nile virus's effect has been relatively mild in San Diego County in the last few years. Three or four people have tested positive annually since 2017, but it can be dangerous and has caused some deaths locally. So far this year, there have been no West Nile virus cases detected in people, animals, or birds, and the county hopes to keep it that way. County Vector Control monitors over 1,600 potential mosquito breeding areas each year and applies larvicide through a variety of strategies, including aerial drops, boats, trucks, and hand crews. The county also gives out free mosquito-eating fish to the public that you can get by calling Vector Control, as well as tracking down and treating neglected swimming pools, testing dead birds for West Nile virus, and monitoring mosquito populations for potential mosquito-borne illnesses. Protecting against mosquitoes has required help from the public, more of it in recent years because of several types of invasive Aedes mosquitoes that have established themselves here. These mosquitoes can potentially transmit diseases not naturally found in San Diego, including Zika virus, dengue fever, and chikungunya, if they become infected by biting a sick person and then feed on other people. Unlike the native mosquitoes, invasive Aedes mosquitoes prefer to live and breed around people's homes and yards, even indoors, in as little as a thimbleful of water. County Vector Control officials say the best way people can protect themselves from mosquitoes is to follow the Prevent, Protect, and Report guidelines. Prevent mosquito breeding by dumping out or removing any item inside or outside homes that can hold water, such as plant saucers, rain gutters, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Mosquito fish are available free and may be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard standing water sources such as unmaintained swimming pools, ponds, fountains, and horse troughs. Protect yourself from mosquito-borne illnesses by wearing long sleeves and pants or use insect repellent when outdoors. Use insect repellent that contains DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, or IR3535. Be sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured to keep bugs out. Report possible mosquito activity, stagnant water sources, as well as dead birds, especially dead crows, ravens, jays, hawks, and owls. You can report all of these to the County Department of Environmental Health and Quality's Vector Control Program by calling 858-694-2888. Also report if you are being bitten by mosquitoes during daylight hours, or if you find mosquitoes that look like invasive Aedes mosquitoes with small black and white stripes on the legs and backs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The feds are seeking public comment now through June 20th on a proposal to put habitat restoration and conservation on equal footing with mining, drilling, logging, ranching, and off-roading on public lands. The Bureau of Land Management manages 15 million acres in California, or 15% of the state. The proposal also would help address climate change and foster better consultation with Native American tribes. Pamela Flick with the nonprofit Defenders of Wildlife says native habitat on BLM lands is losing out to energy development, livestock grazing, unsustainable recreation, and climate impacts.
For nearly 40 years, the agency has largely focused on resource extraction and other multiple uses, but neglected managing public lands for ecosystem health and wildlife. This rulemaking gives the BLM an opportunity to rebalance its priorities.
The National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the Public Lands Council oppose the rule change, saying in a statement that it would, quote, completely upend BLM's multiple-use mandate and jeopardize the agency's ability to be a good partner to the ranchers who manage millions of acres in the West. More than 85% of the land managed by the BLM is open to oil development, mining, and logging. And conservatives in Congress have blocked the Public Lands Act, which would protect more than 1 million acres in the Golden State. Ryan Henson with the nonprofit Cal Wild says this new rule could be a workaround.
Last session, this new BLM policy passed the House twice and could never pass the Senate. And then this session, it's got a great chance of passing the Senate, but zero chance of passing the House. So it allows President Biden to do what Congress can't do, but to do it administratively.
Henson hopes the new rule will inform the upcoming Northwest California Integrated Resource Management Plan, which is expected this summer. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Coupa, One of only a dozen descendants of San Diego's heritage herd of wild horses has died. Owner Kathleen Hayden made the announcement with a breaking heart on Facebook April 16th that the 4-year-old Coyote Canyon stallion Koopa died of a rattlesnake bite in its eye. Hayden is the co-founder of Coyote Canyon Caballos de Anza, a nonprofit in Santa Isabel. For years, she and her foundation have been fighting to gain protection for the heritage herd. The federal government has long refused to recognize horses as native species worthy of protection, believing they were brought here by European explorers. But on March 23rd, Science published a report by 84 researchers who concluded that horses evolved first in North America and later crossed a land bridge over the Bering Strait to Eurasia. There are ancient fossils found in the Anza Borrego Desert and in Carlsbad predating the early Spanish and English explorers to bolster that claim, as well as references to Native American horses in writings of Sir Francis Drake back in 1580. Those findings have reignited the urgent call to save wild horses and try to repopulate San Diego's heritage herd before it is too late. Now extinct in the wild, the San Diego heritage herd has at least 11 descendants documented through DNA testing. Hayden has 5 of those, 3 mares and now 2 stallions that are left. She's asked the county to add the last descendants of San Diego's wild horses into the San Diego County Multiple Species Habitat Conservation Program. The last of local tribal horses were removed from the federally designated Coyote Canyon wild horse herd area by state parks from the Anza Borrego Desert back in 2003. Hayden states in a letter submitted to the county on April 7th that this action violated numerous laws, including the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, the National Environmental Quality Act, the National Preservation Act, and the Wild Horse and Burro Act. Although the herd is extinct in the wild, Hayden says, San Diego has the opportunity to designate habitat and restore the Coyote Canyon herd to genetic viability. Besides the 5 horses on Hayden's property, there are 6 more at undisclosed locations. But if the county designates the heritage herd as a special status species and protected resource in its multiple species habitat plan, Hayden told East County Magazine, we have been assured that the location of the remaining descendants will be disclosed. The California legislature in 2015 added a requirement to include tribal cultural resources in CEQA, but there's evidence that San Diego's tribes were not consulted about the heritage herd as a resource. Although horses are not included in the Federal Endangered Species Act, the Wild Free-Roaming Horses and Burros Act was enacted by Congress to ensure survival of these species on public lands. California Fish and Wildlife indicated in 2016 that if scientific information were to convince experts that Equus caballus should be considered an indigenous species, the change would be made when the next revision of the list of native wildlife eligible for protection comes up. Restoration and preservation of the Coyote Canyon Wild Horses herd has previously been endorsed by the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, Congressman Daryl Issa, and other politicians, as well as by state and local equestrian organizations. Most of the local native horses' historic range are now in the public domain and subject to preservation and restoration mandates. These include the Santa Isabel Preserve and nearby wildlife preserves in Ramona, Vulcan Mountain and Julian, the San Felipe Valley, Warner Springs, and more. Even after burying the stallion Koopa beneath an oak tree on the lands of his ancestors, Hayden remains hopeful. A new foal is due to be born soon, sired by Don Quixote, son of the original stallion from the Coyote Canyon herd on her land. Hayden concludes that it is imperative now to incorporate them as a federally protected special status species in the multiple species habitat plans. But, she warns, the future of the species is dependent on government agencies to ensure habitat so that they don't go extinct. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for East County Magazine's Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers Report, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
This is Jacob Hammes. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department is warning the public about thieves stealing barcodes off of gift cards in stores. Consumers who buy the cards soon discover that the cards have no value after thieves went on shopping sprees. The sheriff's alert comes after the arrest of a woman in Fallbrook in connection with the gift card scam and other crimes. It all started with a traffic stop for an expired registration on April 8th. after a records check revealed the driver had outstanding warrants in Orange and Riverside counties. The car was searched and deputies found hundreds of unused gift cards and stolen mail. A ledger documenting gift card barcodes with corresponding access or PIN codes was also found in the car. These gift cards were tied to Walmart, Target, Ralph's, Bath & Body Works, and Visa gift cards. The stolen mail came from North County communities as well as Ramona in East County. The suspect, Rebecca Steadfield, was arrested on outstanding warrants, identity theft, conspiracy, committing a crime while on bail, and possessing burglary tools. Detective Jenny Martinson with the Sheriff's Fraud and Elder Abuse Unit says local stores were contacted regarding the stolen gift cards and are aware of the gift card scams. As for how the scam works, she explains, thieves will grab cards off the shelves and record the barcode and access codes. The cards are returned to the stores for purchase. Thieves monitor the cards and scammers will use the recorded access codes to steal the funds. The gift cards are no longer of value for the buyer or the intended recipient of the gift. Here's how you can protect yourself. Stick to stores you know and trust. Avoid buying online auction sites because the cards may be fake or stolen. Check it out before you buy. Make sure the protective stickers are on the card and that they do not appear to have been tampered with. Also, check the PIN number on the back isn't showing. Get a different card if you spot the problem. Keep your receipt. This or the card's ID number will help you. File a report if you lose the gift card. Scammers also print barcodes on stickers and replace them on top of the real gift card numbers and PINs. Run your finger over the barcode to ensure a sticker hasn't been applied. If the packaging looks altered in any way, it could be a scam. Thieves will open the sealed packaging, record the gift card information, and then place back on the shelf. Report fraud to the store. They may ask you to share your receipt and other purchase info. If you lost money, contact your local law enforcement agency. A crime report may help you deal with the card issuer. Also, report the fraud to Federal Trade Commission to help the FTC prevent future cases. If you have information about the local gift card thefts or you think you might be a victim, call the Sheriff's Department non-emergency line at 858-565-5200. You can also remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for any information that leads to a felony arrest by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
The Biden administration has announced plans to allow expanded health care coverage for DREAMers, young undocumented immigrants, and the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, or DACA program. Under his plan, DREAMers would become eligible for federal health care programs, including Medicare and the Affordable Care Act exchanges. Biden has asked the Department of Health and Human Services to propose a rule amending the definition of lawful presence for purposes of eligibility for federal health care benefits. 8 states have already done so. President Joe Biden posted on Twitter, "Health care should be a right. I've worked hard to get more Americans health insurance than ever before," the president said, adding that this action aims to give DREAMers the same opportunities. But a group of conservative-led states has filed a legal action seeking to block the expanded coverage. The DACA program started under the Obama-Biden administration, allowing young people brought to the U.S. as children to be able to live and work in the U.S. It was challenged by the Trump administration and a court blocked new signups to the DACA program, though an estimated 580,000 young people still in the program would stand to benefit if the healthcare expansion is upheld. Jamila Michener, co-director of the Cornell Center for Health Equity at Cornell University, says the benefits would be resounding not only for young immigrants, but also for the entire healthcare system by reducing the cost of emergency care. "No one wins when immigrants cannot readily access healthcare," Michener concludes. Congressman Juan Vargas, a Democrat from San Diego, hopes to see DREAMers gain access to more social programs, such as federal housing loans. He says, "DREAMers who on average were brought here at the age of 6 deserve access to the same basic human rights as everyone else. The Biden administration's announcement is a huge step in the right direction that brings much-needed momentum." The lawsuit was filed by Republican attorneys general for Texas and other states. The states contend that the lawsuit is about the scope of executive power, not the wisdom of any particular immigrant policy. Though the GOP has long waged legal battles to overturn the DACA program and has refused to enact comprehensive immigration reforms in Congress. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, says of the proposal to expand health care for Dreamers, President Biden's inflation has already hammered working families, and now the Democrats want our citizens to pay for our new taxpayer-funded benefits for illegal immigrants as well. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Daniela Torres.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat Report. The Hamul Indian Village Development Corporation, owner and operator of Hamul Casino, has closed a $515 million deal to fund construction of a hotel as well as to refinance existing debt. The agreement is with Senior Secured Credit Facilities through a syndicate of commercial banks. Hamul Indian Village Tribal Chairwoman Erica Pinto says the terms of this transaction will allow us to focus on our long-term financial stability and new projects that continue to provide benefits for the tribe. This is the third significant financial transaction completed for the casino, which refinanced the property in 2021 and again in 2022. The tribe plans to build a 16-story hotel with 200 rooms, a rooftop pool and hot tub, a spa and salon, a fitness center, a restaurant, lobby bar, and banquet room. The proposed hotel and event center has generated some community opposition, with concerns primarily over traffic, noise, environmental impacts, and wildfire concerns. The Hamul Del Zura Community Planning Group recently voted to ask county staff to help mitigate those concerns, including identifying multiple wildfire evacuation routes, seeking a new traffic study by an independent consultant, and making sure that all traffic mitigation projects required for the original casino are completed.
La Mesa has a new assistant city manager. After an extensive recruitment process, the city has hired Amanda Lee, who has been serving as acting city manager in Vista for the past 6 months. Formerly, she served as Vista's assistant city manager, supervising homelessness and housing, communications, code enforcement, climate action plan, implementation, grants, and governmental relations, as well as administrative staff. She was also responsible for development of Vista's operating and capital improvement project budgets, as well as assisting with city council priority project. She holds bachelor's and master's degrees in public administration from San Diego State University. Reporting for East County Magazine in La Mesa, this is Daniela Torres.
El Cajon's planning commissioners have voted unanimously to revoke the approved status of the Motel 6 on Montrose Court after two registered sex offenders were arrested for alleged sexual assault of an underage girl in a room at the motel. The commission gave the motel a list of conditions to comply with within 30 days, including hiring round-the-clock security and undergoing training on human trafficking. The motel can stay open under a conditional use permit for up to 90 days, but must come before the planning commission before that deadline to determine whether or not the motel will be allowed to continue operating in the city. The two sex offenders were wearing ankle bracelets, and one was staying at the motel under a county-funded voucher program for homeless people when they were arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting the young teen girl and videotaping the actions. The city has indicated it believes other girls may have been victimized by the men. Attorney Jason Sacuzzo, representing the motel's owners, told the commission that the motel is no longer accepting vouchers from PATH, the organization that sent the sex offender to the motel. The lawyer said the motel owners were not aware that some voucher recipients had just been released from jail. The county has said its voucher program is open to all homeless people, including convicted criminals, though individuals are kicked out if they violate the rules. A spokesperson for El Cajon Police told planning commissioners that the department has received over 350 calls requesting a police response at the motel over the year prior to the alleged assault for various other crimes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Consumer groups are praising changes to a proposed bill needed to make sure drivers can continue to get free computer upgrades to repair serious safety issues remotely. One of the provisions of Assembly Bill 473 would forbid car manufacturers from competing with car dealers regarding sales or servicing a vehicle. Rosemary Shahan with the group Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says that could have had unintended consequences.
It's a big relief that the bill's being changed so that consumers won't be forced to go to a car dealer to get a free safety recall repair. They'll be able to get it while the car's in their driveway, and that means a lot more cars will actually get the recall repairs done.
The bill's sponsor, the California New Car Dealers Association, just submitted changes clarifying that over-the-air safety fixes are allowed. Over-the-air fixes are software updates that can be done remotely by the manufacturer. Other sections of the bill prevent manufacturers from charging subscription fees for things like heated seats that are built into the vehicle. The bill would not apply to entertainment subscriptions like Sirius XM. Brian Moss, president of the California New Car Dealers Association, says the new language makes an exception when the manufacturer is directly providing a free safety update to motor vehicle software.
If it has to do with safety and the manufacturer is not charging the customer, no problem. Update the software over the air. But if it's a feature of the car that isn't related to safety and they want to charge for it, the consumer should pay for that upfront when they buy the car.
The Alliance for Automotive Innovation, a manufacturer's trade group, said in a statement that by prohibiting manufacturers from offering consumers subscription services for vehicle features, this bill limits consumer choice, stifles innovation, increases costs to consumers, and negatively impacts used car buyers. Shahan notes that car dealers are sponsoring similar legislation in multiple states. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Jonathan Getz.
With Destination East County.
There's a wide assortment of events coming up across San Diego's East County, including Cajon Classic Cruises, a butterfly jungle, music festivals and concerts, a Lego building event, a wine and food festival, Campo Days, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers and Bears in Alpine, a Western Days Parade, a rodeo, and Descanso Day.
Cajon Classic Cruises continue each Wednesday from 5 to 7:30 p.m. all summer long along Main Street in downtown El Cajon. And you can get a full schedule of the events at downtownelcajon.com.
The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in Escondido invites you to a spring safari featuring a butterfly jungle. Visitors can wander through the hidden jungle aviary among hundreds of colorful, fluttering butterflies, have a chance to feed them, and learn how they contribute to our ecosystem, as well as help save wildlife in our own backyard. Spring Safari featuring Butterfly Jungle will shine a spotlight on the individual local wildlife in the Southwest region, including San Diego, a biodiversity hotspot. Guests are also encouraged to visit the Safari Park's native Nectar Garden and Baja Gardens. Guests can also enjoy live music, dancing, juggling, and strawberry-themed treats. The Spring Safari featuring Butterfly Jungle continues through May 14th with check-in from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. daily. Find more information at sdzsafaripark.org/spring-safari.
El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Series opens May 5th and will continue every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. from May through September. Opening night will feature Twisted Gypsy, a Fleetwood Mac tribute band taking you back to the early days of 70s rock and roll. The concerts will be held at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon on Main Street between Magnolia and Valentine. Other concerts coming up in May include the Jim Allen Band on May 12th, the Patrick Howard Trumpet Band May 19th, and Fortunate Son on May 26th. For a full schedule of events all summer long, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Grossmont Center in La Mesa is hosting a Lego Build event on April 29th from 12 noon to 4 p.m. You're invited to bring the kids and join the L-Gage Museum Master Builders in front of the Grossmont Center Railroad Model Train Display for a fun afternoon with Legos. No registration is required, so you can stop by anytime and enjoy viewing the trains as well as fun with Legos. For more information, visit grossmontcenter.com.
On May 6th, Cuyamaca College is combining several major events for a true springtime extravaganza. Coyote Music Festival will present a range of amazing artists in the Gardens Amphitheater all day, from rock and roll bands to singer-songwriters' melodic tunes. The Water Conservation Garden will host its own Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival, also on May 6th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Guests can watch butterfly releases, and children can join Miss Sparty Plants and Miss Monarch at a pollinator party to hear stories and craft their own pollinator wings. The garden will also have specialty vendors, workshops, and food trucks. In addition, Cuyamaca College's Ornamental Horticulture Department will hold its largest plant sale of the year in their brand new nursery. Plus, the Heritage of the Americas Museum will be hosting tours throughout the day. Find more details at thegarden.org.
You're invited to experience the history and heritage of San Diego's East County during Campo Days on May 6th and 7th. Guests can experience historic train rides, vintage vehicles, equestrian events, military history, food, music, and more at four locations in Campo: the Gaskill Brothers Stone Store Museum, Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility, Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, and the Motor Transport Museum. You can find more information at visitcampo.com.
You're invited to savor tastes from 25 wineries, 3 breweries, and 20 local restaurants at Vintage Alpine on May 7th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs. Vintage Alpine began in 1990 and is now one of the biggest events of its kind in San Diego County. More than 500 people from all over the Southwest attend the event, which also features relaxing live music in a beautiful garden setting, as well as a silent auction and opportunities to meet wine and food experts. All proceeds from Vintage Alpine are used by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine to provide services and programs supporting the children of San Diego. For tickets and reservations, you can visit vintagealpine.org.
The City of Santee will host its Friday Nights Live Entertainment Series at the Santee Trolley Square, kicking off summer with family fun and entertainment. The events will be held each Friday from May 19th through June 9th from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. The lineup includes It's Never Too Late, Expressions Dance and Movement, Bill McGee Blues, and Stomp Music School. Learn more at SanteeSpecialEvents.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a nonprofit exotic animal sanctuary in Alpine, invites you to their annual fundraising bash, Wild in the Country, on May 20th. This year's event features MCs Jagger and Christie from Magic 92.5 Radio, as well as Broadway stars Sandra Joseph and Ron Bohmer, the lead actors in Phantom of the Opera and Les Miserables. Dinner will be prepared by world-renowned chef Jeffrey Strauss, known as the Chef to the Stars, for pleasing the palates of dignitaries, presidents, royalty, and entertainment icons. The main event will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. on May 20th. There is also a pre-event reception for platinum and gold-level ticket holders at 1 p.m. For tickets, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The theme of this year's Western Days Parade in Lakeside will be Fighting for Justice. District Attorney Summer Steffen will serve as Grand Marshal of the parade on Saturday, April 29th. The 59th annual parade, sponsored by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce, begins at 9:35 a.m. and will proceed along Main Avenue in downtown Lakeside. The next day, May 30th, the annual Lakeside Rodeo will be held, featuring traditional Western competitions such as bull riding and barrel races. For more on the rodeo, visit lakesiderodeo.com.
Descanso's first community fair was held back in 1899 under a tent near the creek. The tradition has grown through the years to include a parade and a community fair, which this year will be held on June 3rd. The festivities take place at the historic Descanso Town Hall on Viejas Grade Road in Descanso, a small rural town east of Alpine. Arrive early, since roads close at 8 a.m. for the parade, which starts at 9. The parade is followed by the fair, which begins at 10 a.m. and runs until 4 p.m. You're invited to get your boots on at Descanso Day to learn more about the town's history and enjoy the fun, which includes music by Whiskey Ridge, food by Descanso Junction, and beer served up by Burning Beard Brewing Company. There will also be vendors, children's games, face painting, horseshoe tournaments, a cakewalk, raffle, and more.
That's all for this week.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The Julian Fiddlecamp's Spring Concert Series is coming up May 5th and 6th at 7 p.m. featuring new, old-time, and fiddle fever music at Camp Whispering Winds in Julian. Students at the fiddle camp compete each year in a fiddling competition in Julian that attracts top talent from across the nation. So we thought this would be a good time to replay one of our Best of East County segments when we covered a local fiddle champion at that competition. Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old-Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally, according to the National Association of Music Manufacturers. And locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, "This is the music of the people," adding, "One person sits with and teaches another." Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, "I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that." Though played on the same instrument as a violin, he adds, "Fiddle music calls you to dance." Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old Time Fiddlers Association, but, he says, the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddlin' Pickin' contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and show fests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All 3 pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morning Star Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a 2-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shira was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her!" The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, 3 of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed Festival Waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the awards winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his fans. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife-attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular-shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that, that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
San Diego Gas and Electric Company has submitted an application asking the U.S. Department of Energy for up to $100 million in federal funds through the Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships Grant Program, which is part of the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. If the grant is approved, SDG&E plans to use the money to help offset the costs of wildfire hardening efforts on and around federally recognized tribal nations land within SDG&E's service territory. Pending final approval from the California Public Utilities Commission, the federal funds would be matched with an additional $100 million from SDG&E. Carolyn Wynn, CEO of SDG&E, says, "Our region has the most federally recognized tribes of any county in the nation, and all are located in areas facing the highest risk for wildfire. These funds would help us continue to work with tribes to provide safe and resilient energy in the face of a changing climate." She adds that if approved, the grant funds would not only help improve safety on tribal lands which have experienced wildfires, but would also help reduce energy costs. The grant would enable fire hardening approximately 70 miles of SDG&E's electric grid. This includes undergrounding around 64 miles of power lines and other improvements, benefiting up to 10 of the region's tribal communities. SDG&E anticipates receiving notification this summer on whether the grant was approved and hopes to begin construction from 2024 to 2026. Even if the grant application is denied, the company still plans to move forward with the fire hardening projects pending approval from the California Public Utilities Commission, but it could be the ratepayers footing the bill. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, your network for social justice, this is John Tidwell.
CAL FIRE has launched a new online burn permit application platform that offers the public a user-friendly way to request a burn permit. Burn permits that are available on this platform include residential burn piles, general burning such as agricultural, and controlled burns for fuel reduction. Once an application is submitted, a CAL FIRE representative will review and process the information and may require a site visit.
Even with a valid burn permit from CAL FIRE, residents on state-controlled lands must confirm that it is a permissive burn day with their local air quality management agency. For more information or to apply for an online burn permit, visit burnpermit.fire.ca.gov. Again, that's burnpermit.fire.ca.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego Gas and Electric Company has submitted an application asking the U.S. Department of Energy for up to $100 million in federal funds through the Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships Grant Program, which is part of the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. If the grant is approved, SDG&E plans to use the money to help offset the costs of wildfire hardening efforts on and around federally recognized tribal nations' land within SDG&E's service territory. Pending final approval from the California Public Utilities Commission, the federal funds would be matched with an additional $100 million from SDG&E. Carolyn Wynn, CEO of SDG&E, says, "Our region has the most federally recognized tribes of any county in the nation, and all are located in areas facing the highest risk for wildfire. These funds would help us continue to work with tribes to provide safe and resilient energy in the face of a changing climate." She adds that if approved, the grant funds would not only help improve safety on tribal lands which have experienced wildfires, but would also help reduce energy costs. The grant would enable fire hardening approximately 70 miles of SDG&E's electric grid. This includes undergrounding around 64 miles of power lines and other improvements, benefiting up to 10 of the region's tribal communities. SDG&E anticipates receiving notification this summer on whether the grant was approved and hopes to begin construction from 2024 to 2026. Even if the grant application is denied, the company still plans to move forward with the fire hardening projects pending approval from the California Public Utilities Commission, but it could be the ratepayers footing the bill. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, your network for social justice, this is John Tidwell.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Scanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.